See, mister? Although he once had felt the Eternal's clasp, too near to suffering worlds, his nature lived. And where he stood were entrances of night. Hardly too close beset by the world's care, can the dense mold in which we have been made return sheer joy to joy, pure light to light. For the tormented will to think and live, first to a mingled pain and pleasure woke, and still it keeps the habit of its birth. A dire duality is our way to be. That is the whole problem, the duality. Our origin is not just the divine light, our origin is also the unconscious, dark resistance of matter. And we are caught in the middle. And that is why those are the entrances of night. Our being is made of the stuff of inertia. Matter is inertia. And therefore we cannot break out of this world of darkness and inertia too easily. Even though you are like, if one is like him, like Ashwapati. So he says, although he once had felt the Eternal's clasp, he had come in touch with the divine. It is true. I mean, like all of us must have at some point felt a connection with the divine. Too near to suffering worlds, his nature lived. We are connected with the world of darkness. We are not free. Even though we have, for instance, in our own personal experience, the contact with the divine atmosphere, the divine consciousness, we are part of the world of darkness and we cannot deny it. So did Ashwapati. Ashwapati is the embodiment of the earth's aspiration. The earth is breaking out of its inertia to rise higher. But the inertia clings for a long time. Just like a plant that comes out of the soil in the beginning, the little shoot, is covered with mud and stays covered with mud, so also we. Therefore, and where he stood were entrances of night. Night diffuses the supremacy of light. Night refuses the finality of truth. Though it is all the time an interplay, night is the beginner of light, no doubt, but night cancels light also, while it lasts. Hardly too close beset by the world's care, that is what he was. He had come down for the sake of earth. Ashwapati was not just a human being. He has come down from the world of the evolutionary force, or the involutionary force rather, has come down among us. This is Sri Aurobindo. And he is taking part in our own journey. So he is beset, he is surrounded, he is part of the world's difficulties. Like so many letters Sri Aurobindo has written, that you people think I have had no difficulties. I have had all the difficulties and all the sufferings that one can have. And he adds, mother, 10 times more. Because she is doing the work. 10 to 100 times more, she has also gone through every possible problem, suffering, in the subconscious, in the nature of matter, in the nature of the vital, all the things that refuse to change, that refuse to go away. It is for that they have come. It is not just to be as guides who are above, like luminous beings that above show us, this is the truth, this is the light. You read passages from Sri Aurobindo and the Mother. No, you have to live them. We cannot live them because he, first of all, he is living them. He is going through these difficulties. So, because we are made of the dense mold, the mold of inert, dark, unconscious matter, and that is resistant to or refuses to open to the light, to the divine, which is why we try so hard. We try to feel that I would like to progress, I would like to change, I would like my being to become some kind of vessel or instrument of the divine force. It's very beautiful to think that. Why can I not become? Because the vessel itself is made of metal. That metal is not conscious. My spirit has a certain amount of consciousness. My metal is not. This is solid iron, brass, strong, antagonistic to suppleness, to be molded, to be shaped. That is why it does not return sheer joy to joy. The touch of light is always there. We cannot live without the grace. We cannot live without the divine help. It is not possible. Here, as Mother says, you cannot breathe here in the ashram without breathing the grace. The very fact that we are breathing here, you are breathing her. It is sheer joy. And we can respond to it with our inmost nature. Pure light to light. But there is the tormented will. The will that is a push, a drive that has formed itself from formless matter. It takes the form of an ego. It has sort of condensed itself into some kind of a power that does not want to proceed forward. To think, to live out of this world of form, life. Life is energy. This energy is not necessarily turned towards growth, towards light. This energy is simply the play of force. And force breaks out in all directions. So the more energy we have and the less consciousness you have at the same time, we become instruments of dark force, evil, twisted manifestations of perversity. All these things happen. It is natural. It is not, why do these things happen? They have to happen. Because that force that is breaking out of the inert matter has not yet become a channel of consciousness. It is simply force. When it becomes conscious force, then it can be used as an instrument of the divine. As long as we are not expressions of the conscious force, we are simply force. And that is the first energy that manifests itself. That is called, Sri Aurobindo often refers to that phrase, l'élan vital. It's just a push. It's a drive. That push doesn't know where to go. That's not like the wind that is not always taking us in the right, when we are on the sea, taking us in the right direction. We can lose our way. At a certain stage, mind comes in. Mind comes in, a certain amount of understanding comes in, a certain amount of clarity comes in, but the mind is complex. What it thinks is right according to it. It puts before us so many possibilities, and our own understanding, based on our own likes and dislikes, on our own ego, this is the right thing to do. That is why the clash of different thoughts, different philosophies, different religions, because each is convinced that it is right. Because the mind has a formative power. But who says that this formative power is a projection of the supreme creative energy? Mind distorts. Mind is very variable. So, but it is part of the breaking out of inertia. That is what is one of the gifts of body, life, mind. The more we evolve for a long time, the more our problems multiply, our difficulties open up in front of us. We lose our way, we don't know what to do, where to go. So we choose what we think is joy. We have made the choice of pain, that which will take us, pull us down. And that is what is success very often in the world of life. We make a push towards achieving success. Success is defined by our mental understanding. Success is what we think will, you might say, inflate our sense of self-importance, and that would become an obstruction to our opening to the divine, our incapacity for self-giving, for surrender, for allowing that force to work through us. The secret is to let that force of light utilize us. But in order to allow ourselves to be utilized by the divine force, we have to remove our ego. We have to learn to surrender. But first you have to have an ego, and then you have to give it up. That is the whole complexity. First you have to develop a human personality, then realize that its shortcomings. It has so many things that come in the way. A totally undeveloped consciousness does not proceed. We have to acquire a certain development of body and life and mind. Each part has its own individuality. And this individuality gradually becomes that which shows, or we think it shows, the way we should proceed. And it will always be a partial knowledge, because it is not in touch with the divine. This partial knowledge will take us off the track. So there are very great men, very great thinkers, very great achievers who go away from the divine manifestation. The more they know, the further they go from the divine. There have been very great figures, for instance, who don't know anything. Wisdom is not knowledge. If you take the example of someone like Sri Ramakrishna, who never pretended to know, to be intelligent, he didn't. He was not a seeker of jnana. He was a lover, a worshipper, one who could offer himself unquestioningly to the divine will. That is the true wisdom. But he guided his seeker of knowledge, which was Vivekananda. Because knowledge has to grow. A time has to come. We cannot avoid the development of the mind. It has to follow. But if it is supported by the selfless spiritual presence within, then we move in the right direction. That is one of the secrets of the Vedanta. There is an inner spiritual guidance, and that will take us forward. Otherwise, we cannot really know. That is why, for its tormented will to think and live, first to a mingled pain and pleasure work. We are not sure whether what I have achieved will give me joy or will become the cause of a greater difficulty. The more you learn, the greater your difficulties. The less you learn, the simpler you are. The easier for the divine to take over your nature. And still it keeps the habit of its birth. Birth from matter. That dullness, that resistance remains. We grow in the world of life, we grow in the world of mind, but the material sheath in its inert dullness does not go away. So we are made of different elements. These elements are not harmonized. And so in this future world of the perfect human being, harmony is the most important. We have to harmonize body, life, mind, spirit, all under the central guidance of the Supreme Consciousness. Until that is done, there will always be difficulties that will pull us this way or that way. That is why a dire duality is our way to be. Man is part of the lower creation. Man is attracted to the higher world of light. So you are torn in two. That is the whole problem. The more you evolve, the more you are aware of your incompletenesses, the more you are conscious, the more you realize how unconscious you are. It is really dire. It is terrible. In the crude beginnings of this mortal world, which is absolute unconsciousness, manifestation, that is why mortal. Otherwise it would be immortal. Everything is a projection of the immortal power. But where there is a limit, mortality comes in. I am not capable of containing the entire flow of the divine energy. My instrument is small. Therefore, my instrument will break up. It has to. I may want immortality. Man wants immortality. He does not like to die. But he has to. Until he changes the very fabric of his being. That is the whole problem. You cannot have God, light, freedom, immortality unless you are an embodiment of the divine consciousness. But this is what we have always been preoccupied with. That's the first line of the Life Divine. In the crude beginnings of this mortal world, life was not, nor mind's play, nor heart's desire. The vital or the mental world were still not predominant or not even very active. When earth was built in the unconscious void, because it starts in the play of pure energy, the whole creation starts with a projection of energy. This energy is moving in the void. There is no form. Gradually this energy repeats its cycles, and as it rotates, a certain form, a certain crust is made. That crust is what you may call matter. But it hides that supreme force, that energy. Even now, if you really study the play of matter, deep within is heat, is fire. It is there within. So when earth was built in the unconscious void and nothing was save a material scene, only that, only matter. There was nobody, there was no consciousness, no being, no form, no individuality. Therefore no ego also. Identified with sea and sky and stone, her young gods yearned for the release of souls, asleep in objects, vague, inanimate. So now he's lifting the whole thing to another level. These forces, the earth is rotating, the energy is at play. These are cosmic powers. So these cosmic powers of force, of movement, they are symbols of possibilities. Earth and sky and rain and water. This is the beginning of the Vedic vision. In the Vedas, for instance, and he's referring perhaps to that. There was nobody. There was sky, there was water, there was soil, there was wind, there was fire. The elements, speak of the five elements. They are part of simply a play. Gradually, in this void, these forces wanted to acquire a certain manifestation. That is where the beginning starts. At some point, they are not just anonymous forces. They become individuals, gods. Gods are embodiments of permanent and perfect and complete expression at a certain stage. At every stage, say the wind, Vayu, is a force. It is nothing but force. It's that which connects earth and sky. The wind connects earth to sky and sky to earth. It has no other function. But that function it does as well as it can. Earth is a base. All stands on the soil of matter. Or you have the image of a world above the sky, a vast expansion, a spreading out of the world of light. It is as if these are expressions of some intention of the Supreme Creator. This intention is symbolized by different gods. The gods are forms. The gods are perfect formations. When we feel something intensely, there is a formulation or a form in our mind and say, this is what I feel. It is as if the whole creation felt there are powers. These powers are moving for what? To achieve what? So sea, sky, stone, they are all expressions of some beginning of formation. It is that original creative energy that is part of that creation. They are young gods, that is to say, they have not yet emerged. They have not yet come out into play. They are beginning to emerge. Yearned for the release of souls, asleep in objects, vague, inanimate. Something which will transmit this force. We are all transmitters in a way. We are also made of stone. But this stone begins at some point to respond, to vibrate, to react, to feel. So the capacity for matter to feel is hidden in matter. The capacity to live is hidden in the stone. This capacity is for a while kept, seems crushed in the world of stone. At some point, when does matter first break out in the form of life? Because out of matter, life comes out. Why does it come out? It is as if something has been kept pushed down below, and at some point it bursts out. So these are waiting to emerge. If that can happen, if out of matter life at some point does come out, and out of living matter at some point mind does come out, why not more? Why not out of mind something more comes out? And that is the whole journey of evolution. Rising from below upwards. Evolution cannot happen unless involution precedes it. So the void actually is the state of the original involution. Everything was as if plunged, involved, kept within, and for a long time apparently disregarded. It was not allowed its free play. At some point, these involved forces wanted to come out. It's like beings that have been locked in, and they want to emerge. And that is the whole play of multiplicity. this world, this universe is very complex, it's very multiple, it's very variable. But all these possibilities are hidden in the finite is actually an aspect of the infinite. The infinite is hidden in each aspect of matter. The whole world of life and mind and spirit and consciousness and eventually the supermind, all of this is hidden in the inconscient. So they are asking to come out. So they yearn for the release of souls, asleep in objects, vague, inanimate. In that desolate grandeur, that desolate grandeur which is sea or stone or sky, there is not yet the individualization. It's like a canvas for manifestation, like an artist. He has a blank sheet or a canvas in which things have to be put, shapes have to be made. The shape has to be projected by an artist. The divine artist has to come in to start working. In the desolate grandeur, in that beauty bare, in the deaf stillness, because it doesn't respond. That silence, inertia, is silence. But it is not a silence of quietness. It is a silence of inertia. In the beginning, apparently, mid the unheeded sound, slowly. Sound is a projection of energy. Where there is sound, there is a vibration. Where there is a vibration, there is a transmission. There is a connection. It starts. So he's giving us almost in a very semi-scientific language, which is also the spiritual language, the projection of a vibration, which is a creative energy. In the beginning, this energy seems held back. Then it comes out, the sound. In that stillness, in the unheeded sounds, heavy was the uncommunicated load. That load of possibilities are waiting. These possibilities are waiting to emerge. Just like, to some extent, our own beings. Our own beings have, I'm sure, a concentration of powers, of creation, of experience, of knowledge, which are still have not yet come out into play. All of us contain so much. In fact, we contain the eternal and the infinite within us, of which we are totally unaware, but we feel uneasy if we are obliged to stay completely blocked. You say, I want to express myself. When I express myself, it is not sure what I'm expressing is an expression of light or truth or a vibration of joy or beauty. It is not yet an expression of the divine, but it is an expression. It is something that gives a kind of release. A kind of relief, a breaking out. That evolution is the first breaking out of the possibility of manifestation that is trapped within and is coming out slowly. So this uncommunicated load which has not come out into the open, what load is it of Godhead, of divinity? From the lower to the higher, the movement of consciousness from matter to life to spirit ultimately. It is as if yearning to come out. That is why even today, the way we are far from perfect, we are far from complete, but anything imperfect doesn't satisfy. You say, this is not good enough. Life is not good enough. What we are is not good enough. I have improved from last year. Maybe you say it to satisfy yourself, which is very doubtful, because the lower nature is extremely obstinate. It doesn't disappear so quickly. But it is The yearning to grow, to progress, to change, to move ahead is there, and always the sense of not enough. There is something that has yet to come out, and that is the journey of consciousness. This journey of consciousness is slow, is long. Like all adventures, he describes it as an adventure of consciousness. The possibility of danger, of error, is also there, which we do. We lose our way, we forget, we come back on earth. So we have to repeat the cycles. Change is cyclical. It is not a straightforward climb. It is not a rising from below upwards. It is a rising from below and a falling down again into the lower world. So we rise to fall. We fall to rise. And somewhere in the being, this some part of the being says, how long will this go on? It has to stop. Heavy was the uncommunicated load of Godhead. Godhead is divinity. It's not a being. It's a principle of perfection. They are waiting, these gods, in a world that had no needs. What does that mean? If you want something, then only you attempt. Unless you want, you don't attempt. So often Mother answers when she's asked, Mother, how to do this? What should I do? How should I change? Her first sentence is usually this. Il faut le vouloir. You have to want. You have to want very strongly. You have to want only that. Then there is a beginning. Otherwise, off and on, now and then you want, you say, yes, I want to be like this, I would like this, it would be nice to be like this. Nothing happens. But there is an intensity of wanting. It's a push. It's a drive. Is it desire? Maybe. Even that. It's not always an aspiration. But that's the start. It is that energy that pushes, that makes you dislike yourself the way you are and say, I want to stop being like this. I want to move ahead. So this is that until then, you just accept, yes, I'm imperfect, so I have to live with myself. But the day you feel the need, you have to feel the need of breaking out of a certain mold, a certain way of being, and arrive at another level, something begins to express itself. Until then, it cannot. For none was there to feel or to receive. The individualization had not yet happened. It's just a vastness, a principle of life, a principle of light, a principle of power. But unless it is focused in an individual effort, that's why it is as if the one makes the many. Then he creates the many, the multiplicity. Each one has its own shape, form, character, nature. And through each of us, we have all our different beings, our different possibilities. Something begins to emerge. There is a rhythm, and Sri Aurobindo focuses a lot on rhythm, in the vibration of manifestation. Slowly things come out. This solid mass, in the beginning, he speaks of the beginning, when earth was made. Somebody called you? This solid mass, which brooked no throb of sense. Brook is to tolerate. There was no sense. Sense is a response. If you have our senses, it is through our senses that we connect with the world around us. If we don't have a sensation or a sense, there is no relationship, there is no connection, there are no bridges between ourselves and the world around us. It's all well. This solid mass, which brooked no throb of sense, as yet the individualization had not taken place, could not contain their vast creative urge. Their vast creative urge, these young gods of earth and sea and sky and wind and air, all these things, they have to look for beings. They have to look for vessels. They have to look for individuals who respond, who react, who demand, who ask. In the world of life, this has to be. Unless you want something, it will not be given to you. So, which brooked no throb of sense, could not contain their vast creative urge, immersed no more in matter's harmony. Matter otherwise is immobile. Matter is magnificent. A mountain. This mountain doesn't start shaping itself. It doesn't move. It doesn't grow. At some point, life has to come. It has to be a very small, minute expression of life, not a huge expression of power necessarily, but it has to be there. In matter's harmony, the spirit lost its statuesque repose. The spirit, its statuesque repose, is matter. Matter had become inert, unconscious, like an unmoving statue. When you say statuesque, there is not just a statue, there is something admirable. Something statuesque is something really splendid, it's admirable, it's wonderful. It is vast, there is nothing that is weak. There are no tremors, no vibrations, no hesitations. In the uncaring trance, it groped for sight. The trance is not sleep actually. Trance is when the consciousness is withdrawn so deep inside that on the surface there is an appearance of immobility. As if the consciousness has gone deep within. Because it has gone deep within, there is a sense of stillness, of absolute silence. But it is holding up the whole material universe. That unconscious material universe is actually being held up by the trance of consciousness. Trance is not an absence of consciousness. It is a withdrawal from the surface. It goes deep within. So in that unconscious trance, at some point, a moment of change. Because manifestation is based on change. It is not sameness. It has to change. It has to move.
Why does he say unconscious trance? You said trance is something which is deeper than the surface.
What? The trance? Huh?
So what does it mean, unconscious trance?
Unconsciousness is actually not absence of consciousness. It appears. It is as if the consciousness has just withdrawn. It is there below. It cannot be totally without consciousness because from there all things will grow. From the unconscious is the beginning of growth. So it is this possibility of growth that is hidden in what seems to be at some stage without consciousness. So it is us also. We are without consciousness In many ways, we have forgotten to be conscious. In our bodies, there is a lot of unconsciousness, but it is part of the process. It is as if withdrawn from the surface and is waiting for the right moment. The moment of change must not come until it is ripe. There is a phrase he has used in The Life Divine. Ripeness is all. There's a moment, not too early, but when you are ready, one has to know whether you are ready. Yes, I'm ready. Always the guru would ask the seeker, are you ready? You have to face a lot of difficulties. You have to break out of your present state. If you are not ready, it's not some kind of a passionate wanting, yes, please, I would like to have a beautiful life. Man wants to live happily ever after. By what right can we have happily ever after when we are made of so much error and darkness and unconsciousness? But the possibility of perfect happiness is there only when there is perfect harmony in all the parts of our being. And that is waiting to come out. In the world of matter, the foundation is stability, which is a form of no disharmony. All is in their own proper place. Everything is in it as it should be. In the world of life, it is not stable. It is unstable. The possibilities of mixtures, of movements come. To establish harmony in that world of movement is more difficult. But it becomes more an expression of a greater, richer play, like a richer play of colors. Not just one color, many colors blending into a greater harmony, or many notes blending in a greater symphony. It has to happen. So this solid mass, which brooked no throb of sense, could not contain their vast creative urge. Immersed no more in matter's harmony, the spirit lost its statuesque repose. In the uncaring trance, it groped for sight. So that trance is being slowly broken. Passion for the movements of a conscious heart. Life, feeling, desire, love, joy. You can't always distinguish at a certain stage in the beginning between desire and emotion. For a long time, this distinction is not there because the consciousness has not yet become so open to truth. Famishing for speech, it's a very strong word. Hungry to express oneself, because that is what we want when life wants to manifest itself. You want to move, you want to jump, you want to talk, you want to run, you want to live, you want to do this, you want to do that. And thought, famishing for speech and thought and joy and love. In the dumb, insensitive, wheeling day and night, hungered for the beat of yearning and response. Okay?
Life has just come.
This life energy. The life energy comes and the sense of hunger. And when you're hungry, you're really alive. As you know. And you're not hungry, something is wrong. I think as a doctor you are sure. You say, I'm never hungry. Is that a yogic peace or is it a lack of response? It's true on different ends.